It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Welcome to the Hotel Hell. Check-in time is now, check-out time is never.
It's Mike Shope.
Does my room have cable?
No. And the sheets are made of fire.
Can I change rooms?
Sorry, we're all booked up. Hell convention in town.
And the Bulldog.
Can I have a late checkout?
I'll have to talk to the manager.
You're not the manager, even in your own fantasy?
I'm the owner. The co-owner. With Satan.
It's Mike Shope.
Okay. Just so I understand it, in your wildest fantasy, you are in hell. And you are co-running a bed and breakfast with the devil.
And the Bulldog.
Yeah, but I haven't told you my salary yet.
Go.
$80,000 a year.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Want to give it up for our dude Zach Jones in there on the updates today. He's 4 for 4 so far. He's got two more to go on getting through that Matthew Stafford aggravated disc story unscathed. I
totally jinxed it.
I hope I'm not, you know, doing the no-hitter thing or the shutout thing, but I just props. I mean, it's a minefield out there, and you are so far effortlessly, or so it seems, navigating said minefield. Joining us right now on the West Her Hotline is our buddy Mike Tenier, NFL writer, editor, founder of Two Deep Zone. Mike, how are things, man? It's nice to talk to you.
It's nice to talk to you. You know, the veteran move is just to refer to it as a back injury.
Yeah, that is always a way to do it. But this guy, I mean, he's the road less traveled. That is what Zach Jones is all about. That's his brand. Before we get into this, I want to make sure my buddy Nate Geary was in with me yesterday and is going to be here tomorrow while Mike's on vacation. But he had some golf thing he had to do today, so he couldn't be here. But he wanted me to tell you hello. He felt like you're one of like the OG Saturday Sports Talk Saturday guests.
I miss Nate, but it is very much on brand for him to be golfing at the start of football season, at the height of camp, at the height of the preseason, to have a golf emergency.
And with Hard Knocks debuting last night, Mike. I mean the audacity of this guy to skip work today. Are you a Hard Knocks? I missed it.
Best hour of sleep I ever had.
Oh, right. Okay. So yeah, no, you're not here. Did you like it before it became as sanitized as it seems to be now, or has it never really been much appeal to it for you?
No, it never had much appeal. Before it was sanitized, it still felt like it was 90% scripted, and the entire 10% of people actually spilling tea in front of the cameras would made it in there. And now the 10% is gone, and the whole thing is scripted. And all I know for sure is that I don't want to go driving with Deion Dawkins. Other than that, I don't think I'm going to learn anything about the Bills. I'll say this, though. Boring is good. Boring in July
yes.
is good for a football team. The Browns and the Giants were interesting. Think about it.
Right. No, there's no doubt. I've gotten a lot of that today because I've been saying, like, this might as well be, like, you know, the Bills, all these teams have their own, you know, video and digital arms, and the Bills and Sabres are owned by the same company, and they produce a lot of content that is like, right. Oh, behind the scenes at the draft, like, here's how free agency went down and that kind of right. stuff. And I enjoy that as a fan for sure, but yesterday's debut of Hard Knocks felt almost entirely like it could have been produced by the Bills themselves.
It sounds like Josh Allen had like a screenwriter writing some of his stuff for him. It's a little bit ridiculous. Again, and a lot of times when these guys are just kind of like dedicated to their work kind of guys, you're not going to get an interesting storyline out of them. I would rather if they just had Josh Allen sit there and they showed him a couple of plays from last year and said, just explain the play to us. That would be fine.
Right.
And I'm not talking about like the interception or, you know, throwing the ball away or whatever. His touchdowns or just some random plays. Explain football to us. I would prefer that than to try to be following these guys around and seeing how they pack for work and some of the other behind-the-scenes stuff they try to hit us with.
Yeah, well, you're so boring, Mike. That's, of course, what you – of course, that's what you would like. Well, the thing is, I mean, and I've gotten a lot of that, boring is good. And look, I don't disagree. Like, I want the Bills to be successful, and the less drama they have, the better. But it's not like they're without – anything. I mean, they showed footage from a Friday practice, Friday evening practice at the stadium last Friday, where their leading pass catcher by a lot last year suffered a high ankle sprain and is now out week to week. That didn't get mentioned in this episode, nor did anything about James Cook being dissatisfied with his contract. Now, the hold in began maybe on a timeline where it might have been tough for them to squeeze that in because that just started on Sunday. So I can understand that. So we'll see what the future episodes bring. But the Bills aren't totally drama-free either.
Absolutely not. And I think both might have been on a pretty tight timeline to turn things around. You'll probably see both of those in the next one. And, you know, a hold-in is somewhat interesting. Injuries, obviously, this is important. But when you're trying to do television drama, it's like, well, he's hurt, and he's week to week. And
right.
That's kind of the story. Yep. It's not like people are going to be like having knockdown, drag-out arguments or fun stuff like that for television producers.
Right, of course. So what's your takeaway on the Cook situation so far? We saw Kyren Williams get a contract this week from the Rams. That's a player that's on the field almost 90% of the snaps for the Rams through the last couple of seasons. And in the case of James Cook, who wants to be paid, you know, closer to the top of the market right here, $15 million. Has been a number that has been put out there by him and his camp. He's 47% of snaps. They don't trust him to block on third downs. They've got a third down back. They've got a 1B, if you will, in Ray Davis, and I think they like the timeshare. So what do you think about Cook and, like, what should be the outcome here?
He's not going to get top money. You know, the Bills are very careful. They're paying a lot of people a lot of money. They can't kind of be foolish with contracts. He's not Saquon. He's not Christian McCaffrey. He's not Derrick Henry. I don't think anybody, except possibly he himself, thinks he's in that category. I haven't looked at the Kyren Williams contract. I was looking at things like Chuba Hubbard's contract and Ramondre Stevenson and some of the other guys. That's where Cook probably should be slated. I think he is a valuable player. I think this ends probably sometime in the next week or so. It might end after Ray Davis or Darrytown Evans or somebody like that breaks off a decent run in the preseason game. But it's not going to end with him getting what he wanted. And I guess the one saving grace of this is when you're holding in, you're unlikely to get injured. So when he does sign on and works out a little bit and loosens up, he'll be ready to play, unlike some of the guys who are out there, not just Shakir, but other ones who have been struggling with injuries over the last week.
Right. The Kyren Williams contract, by the way, 3 years, $33 million, 23 guaranteed.
Numbers.
Yeah, those, you know, I'm not eager to do, frankly, this whole time, Mike. My approach has been, look, as mean as it is, like, I like James Cook. I recognize his value. Like, the Bills do not have very many, if any, other than him, explosive playmakers, really. They're not a fast team skill player-wise. We'll see what, you know, Elijah Moore, if he makes the team, does, or if Curtis Samuel's healthy, if that can change. Josh Palmer's a good separator. So they've got some new contributors in the pass-catching department, but Cook gave them explosive plays. He was running away from DBs last year on long runs, and that was like a new facet of his game. So there is value there, but I'd be inclined to just play out the year, and I wouldn't want to give him the Kyren Williams contract. I recognize that might be a good compromise, and I wouldn't be kicking and screaming about it, but I don't need them to do anything. I would be fine letting him go to market next spring.
Yeah, something that sounds like $333, that sounds like a normal contract for James Cook. Some of the other ones that I mentioned are in that range. It's kind of like when you reach the point of what Saquon, Henry, and McCaffrey are making. They're making it for a body of work. That's pretty obvious that they're making it for the fact that they've proven that they can be bell cows for multiple years, that they can do things like come back from an injury, that they can elevate this team to deep playoff runs, which in Cook's case, he came in when they were already a deep playoff run team. That's what that premium money is for, because there's always risk with paying a running back, and those guys said, we are worth the risk. James Cook has not had the kind of season yet in his career where he says, well, this is it. I'm worth the risk, where if I have an injury and I'm playing next year for this much money, it was worth the chance that that would happen.
Mike Tenier, NFL writer, editor, founder of Too Deep Zone. You've also enjoyed his work with Football Outsiders and, as he says in his ex-bio, and other ancient empires, which is one of my favorite ex-bios that I've ever seen. The overall on the Bills, I mean, it's a pretty familiar spot there. And Mike, they're one of the top favorites for the Super Bowl. Again, they've got the reigning MVP on their team. They're still banging the everybody eats mantra when it comes to pass catchers. The offensive line looks like a strength again, together, you know, entirely for two seasons running now. Knock on something wooden here to hope that that continues. What do you think about the overall with the Bills? Do they look like same as it ever was here?
Same as it ever was, possibly even an easier division. According to the DVOA analysis, one of the easiest schedules in the NFL. I look at the obvious opener with the Ravens. After that, there's a chance of going 5-0 before their bye without breaking a sweat. So maybe they're 6-0 or 5-1 as Halloween approaches. And it's almost like there's nothing to talk about until mid-January for this team. I mean, and fans there, you're going to see these wins every week, and probably a lot of fans there are going to say, okay, you know, we beat the Saints 31-0. What does that mean for the AFC Championship game?
Right.
Like, that's kind of how you're going to be looking at this. That's how I'm going to be looking at it as an outsider. So, you know, if you want to talk about home field advantage through the playoffs, they're the team that has the best chance to do that because they should go 6-0 in division, et cetera. And then if you say, well, how do they stack up against the Ravens and the Chiefs? I take a deep breath and I say, well, those are the three teams, aren't they? We're going to have to see as the season unfolds.
Yeah. I don't have a name for this, but my regular partner here, Mike Shope, will reference someone. I don't know if it was a listener or an email or someone on social media said something to the effect, or maybe it's another member of the media that I just don't remember. But anyway, I can't wait until the Bills beat the Chiefs again in the regular season and I feel nothing.
Excellence fatigue. Excellence fatigue.
Right.
Your team is so good most of the time that they can do nothing to convince you and make you feel like they've gotten over any hump until they hit that final hurdle that is months away.
We do have a sort of a I don't know, overhaul might be a little strong, but they did go to work on the defense here,
yeah.
Mike. There's a lot of new parts on the defensive line. You know, the secondary, you know, Tre'Davious White is back, and that seems to be going really well so far. He's
yeah.
healthier than he's been in a long time after suffering two devastating season-ending injuries here in pretty short order before going on last year to be with the Rams and the Baltimore Ravens eventually. But up front, I mean, it's Larry Ogunjobi, and there's two draft pick defensive tackles. There's a third-round pick from last year, Dwayne Carter, where I'm trying to figure out. He's got a pickup truck painted, like, in Bills colors. I'm trying to figure out how he's going to make the team with all the guys in front of him. You've got Joey Bosa, Michael Hoyt. He and Ogunjobi are going to miss six games with suspensions, but still, they really did go to work. How much time have you spent thinking about how different they may be up front?
It is. I am intrigued by that defensive line. I think you answered your question on how Walker makes the team. He's got 6 weeks early on to kind of prove himself with other guys who are suspended. And he's kind of a uniquely built individual where if they can tap his potential.
Yeah, no, not Walker. I was talking about Dwayne Carter, was a third-round pick last year at defensive tackle. Walker, yeah, is this year, he's the behemoth. Yeah, he's a part of the problem for Carter is what I'm thinking.
Okay.
But anyway.
Okay, and then you bring in Bosa again. He probably has a little more left in the tank than Miller did in and out of injuries. And I, you know, I look at it and I want to see it in the preseason because I can see depth in the preseason. That's the one thing I can say. And you know, I just wonder as I look at that and the secondary, how much more optimization you can do on the defense. And again, the Bills, credit to the Bills in terms of sustaining the Super Bowl window. They've done everything you can expect a team to do and more. A weaker organization would be falling apart because of salary cap issues, et cetera. They've been clever with extensions. They've kind of let some guys go maybe a year too early, but then a year too late, and they've played the succession game very well. So when you start talking about T.J. Sanders and Landon Jackson and Deion Walker and Ogunjobi and some of these guys, they say, this is a team that does the succession game very well. They do next man up very well in October and November. That's only going to help them, but I just don't know what the level of help I'd need to see is before I could say, oh, well, that's going to be the missing link that's going to beat the Chiefs in a playoff
game. Right. It would really help if they could find one, if one of these guys who you mentioned can find a way to get in Patrick Mahomes' face in a playoff game. Like, that is that. That's just that they have been lacking that. They got Von Miller to do that, and he did it in a regular season game, made big plays in the fourth quarter of a regular season win there. But by the time the playoffs came around, he was injured, and that was the end of that.
Yeah, and the Eagles were able to do it in the Super Bowl by going like 7 or 8 deep with the different guys pass rushing, but also being able to just shut everything down in their secondary with that Vic Fangio type shell. And maybe it is. Maybe if Hairston can get healthy, et cetera, and White and some of these other guys help Benford out, they can have what they need on the back end to kind of exert their will on the front end.
How about on the other side here? I already mentioned Everybody Eats. We talked about James Cook in the running game. But they did add Josh Palmer. We'll see about Elijah Moore and Curtis Samuel. They feel kind of like one or the other to me, but I don't have to be right about that. Samuel is already missing time with an injury. Moore has been someone who I know the fantasy community has been fawning over for years. Just get him a good quarterback. So maybe he's someone who can show up and sort of surprise. How about Palmer, first of all, maybe most prominently, because I think he's someone, I mean, they're not paying him a ridiculous salary, but he's the highest paid receiver. No, actually, Shakir is with the extension, but they did go into free agency to bring Palmer here. He's got one 70 catch year with the Chargers, and then the rest is kind of pretty pedestrian. What do you think about him as an addition here?
Yeah, he's one of those guys. I mean, he's a big-bodied possession guy. I think he catches what's thrown to him. I don't think he's a great, great separator, but, you know, he wins physical mismatches. I keep going back to the last 3 years of, you know, Justin Herbert doesn't have the weapons. Well, Palmer was one of the non-weapons.
Right.
You know, he was a guy, and you can argue, well, you know, he should be the number three wideout, but, like, he was being used as a number two, number one. There's a chance he's a number two wideout here if Shakir's healthy. It's interesting because he and Keon Coleman have similar traits. You mentioned Elijah Moore and Curtis Samuel being the same guy. They are. They're the same guy. And maybe if one of them is healthy at any given time, that's a win. I'm looking at the back of the lineup, and Laviska Shenault and KJ Hamler, they're kind of the same guy because they're like sort of this injury case, slot speedster, skinny fella here. They've got to kind of put this together in a way that makes sense. Obviously, you got Cook. You've got these tight ends. I don't see the number one, and I guess the thing I do want to see right now is health. I don't know who's going to be healthy week one. I need to see Shakir because I kind of know what he is, and he can say, well, he can do like an Amon Ross, St. Brown type of thing the way he does and open things up, and then maybe you guys get some production out of these new faces.
Let's mention Dalton Kincaid here. It was said to me earlier by our beat guy, Sal Capaccio, that he had a very good day of practice today. Very tough second year injury problems. I think hopefully largely the cause. I say hopefully because you'd want there to be that as an explanation. The problem with that is it something that is going to linger? He did miss one day of practice already with knee soreness. So like I'm watching that very closely. But that's a player I thought, Mike, off the rookie year was showing a lot of promise, and then last year happened, and now maybe the shine is off. I feel like this is a big, big year for him.
Yeah, and I'm just double checking on him. And what's troubling is before the injuries, he wasn't this factor. You know, it was September. He was relatively healthy. One catch, three catch games, etc. So much of, I think, what Joe Brady wants to do, I think so much of what's within Josh Allen's comfort zone is you can run this two tight end base attack and you have the opportunity to do power and speed, because Kincaid should be able to do both things. Knox can also stretch a little bit. You can run, you can throw. Josh Allen can run options. You can call plays at the line like RPOs because you're not in the spread formation situation. That's what they want. I think they want Kincaid to be the elite player. I think they drafted him to be a tight end receiver hybrid, to be the big possession guy. And, you know, I haven't seen him. I don't know what his health status is, but that's another key because it's like, well, he regains form, then you don't worry so much about, you know, what's Curtis Samuel going to bring to the table because he gets relegated to more of a role player status.
Mike Tenier of Two Deep Zone on the Western Hotline for just another couple of minutes here. You mentioned it already. The division looks like a pretty cozy ride. If there's a team that I should be looking over my shoulder at amongst the Dolphins, Jets, and Patriots, who do you think it should be?
It's the Patriots, and it's like way over the shoulder. It's the Patriots in terms of, you know, you could end up with the season split or something like that with this team, as they made a lot of additions both through the draft and on free agency. I'm going to not name them all because there's 137 guys they added. But Drake May definitely demonstrated some potential to be a franchise-level quarterback. And I don't even know if you guys saw him last year because you saw Milton in the finale. So those are your worries there. I think that the Jets are really almost like taking their gap year right now to find themselves with Justin Fields. And the Dolphins are literally having some sort of like emotional nervous breakdown as we speak. Day by day, the news, the quotes out of there become more dire. I don't think Mike McDaniel lasts the season as their head coach. And I'm starting to wonder if he's going to last September as their head coach, the way that the news is going out of there.
I'm with you on Miami. I just think it seems like it's reached a conclusion here. Like we talked a lot at this time last year about the Bills window. Man, I think the Miami, there's plywood over the window. I think it's this point with Miami is how I feel. I love it. The Jets are backpacking across Europe, is what you're telling me.
Yes, that's it.
All right.
And they're shuttering up the windows in Miami.
What do you think about the Chiefs real quick before you go? Because I'm sort of bracing for – I know there's always health, right? And there's Rashee Rice suspension perhaps incoming at some point here. But all the talk about Mahomes and the explosive plays going away and their passing offense just being very pedestrian now, I don't know. I'm sort of bracing for like a 5,000-yard, 45-touchdown Mahomes season incoming.
That might be your Bills anxiety talking to him.
Yeah, for sure.
The Chiefs. And both in my gut and as I look at the projections, DVOA projections from FTN Almanac, I see the Ravens and the Bills kind of neck and neck for the top projection, and the Chiefs a clear tier below them. And there's a team that has a bunch of new faces on the offensive line, possibly a rookie left tackle in Josh Simmons that they're trying to work in. Their team is up against the cap to a degree. They've got some new faces all over the place. And their playmaker core isn't really set either. The one thing I'll say about them is that when they go out and they draft these guys like Rice and Worthy and Jalen Royals, they're always drafting like the fastest dude. They're always drafting like the fastest dude where you look at them and say, oh my gosh, between catching bombs and catching screen and go and catching end arounds, this guy's going to be touchdowns. And that's the thing you worry about. And I look at the Bills, they always seem to be going after like the biggest, sturdiest dude. And sometimes I think, guys, maybe try the fastest dude just once and see if that helps you guys do what those guys are doing every
year. Well, you're preaching to the choir here. The Xavier Worthy trade made me insane, Mike. Absolutely. That was my guy in that draft. Like, not only are you not taking him, you're trading out of the spot and letting Kansas City take him. And I mean, oh, my God. All right. We got to go. Mike, thank you so much for the time. Always enjoy it. And I'm sure we'll catch up once the season gets rolling.
You got it. Take care and be careful when you're talking about Matthew Stafford's back injury.
Yes, indeed. Mike Tenier, NFL writer, editor, founder of Two Deep Zone, formerly with Football Outsiders, and our buddy Aaron Schatz over there. And he's still contributing to Aaron's venture, the Almanac and FTN and all that. So good dude, that Mike Tenier. All right, I got to hit up a timeout. I'm the Bulldog. Mike is away this week. Thanks a lot for hanging with me here on a Wednesday. This is WGR.
I don't really talk to James about his situation. You know, I just control what I can control. You know, it's about just coming out here and doing what I can do. It's kind of a next man up mentality for practice. So, you know, whoever's getting reps, me, Ty, Diev, or Frank, we just got to go out there and, you know, keep playing ball and, you know, let everything take care of itself.
That is Bill's running back. You know, one of the ones that's actually participating in practice. Hey-o! That's Ray Davis talking about the James Cook situation. It was a line. I'm not freaking out at all about the James Cook situation. I understand where he's at. I don't think he's being realistic, but, you know, shoot your shot. This is the chance, really, well, this year, ideally for him, to get a big contract extension. You know, he can do that as a free agent next year, but he's got to go through, you know, 17 plus, ideally 3 months, so 20 games, right? To get there, that includes the Super Bowl and only 2 playoff games, because see, in my head, they're the 1 seed. Did you follow all that? Anyway, so I respect, I took a shot there just because. you know, sometimes there's a line that comes to mind and you just feel like you got to say it. Thanks a lot for hanging with us today. I want to tell a little story about something that happened to me this morning that was really super cool. I was heading out. Most days, I don't do a lot all day. I either golf or I ride my bike in the morning. That's it. You know, at this time of the year. So I golfed yesterday, today's bike ride day. And so I got, it's a whole thing, right? I got to get the stupid little shoes on and the pants with the diaper in them and everything for the padding. And so I get all ready. I get my bike outside the gate of my backyard and I'm about to clip in, start up my Map My Ride app and head out on my way to do a bunch of loops in the park, basically, is what I was planning on doing. Just as I was about to take off, a car pulled up to the curb right where I was. And it was an older – I got to be careful about older because I'm old. But this woman, it turns out, indeed, was older than me. So an older woman was driving, and she'd rolled down the passenger window, and she was – frantic would be an overstatement, but she was clearly in some sort of distress. So that immediately got my attention, and I could hear her saying from the car before I even got over to the window, can you please help me? I need some help, please. And I, of course, said, sure, what can I do for you? She says, I'm looking for a church. I have to go to a funeral for my friend. She said the name of the friend. I don't remember the name of the friend. It's not germane to the story. I'm looking for a church. I got to get to this funeral for my friend. And I'm confused about where I am. And I said, well, you did just pass a church there. Like, I live a block from St. Mark's in North Buffalo. And she says, no, that's not it. But I was supposed to turn right on Amherst Street. And I said, well, you're in good shape in that you are on Amherst Street right now. This is Amherst Street, so you've got that covered. I said, do you remember the name of the church? And she says something. I don't remember. Ascension, maybe, I think, is what she said. And so I think, hey, you know what? Let me, she doesn't appear to have a phone or, you know, with like map or anything or any kind of written directions at all. She's not holding papers or anything with notes on it about where she was supposed to go. She just says, I think it's this. So I have my phone in my hand because I was about to start up my bike riding app. And I said, okay, well, let me type that into my map app here and we'll see what comes up. And the closest church with the name she had said to me, and I'm not sure what it was, so I won't say it again, was like other side of town, like West Utica, right? Like across town, west side. And so I tell her that and she says, no, that can't be it. She says something about a bowling alley that she remembers. And I'm thinking, like, there's a bowling alley on the other side of Main Street from here, but there, I don't know of a church near there. And like, I'm like, that can't be it. And so I said, you know, hold on a second. Let me just search churches in general. And like, you know, there'll be a bunch that come up and holy cow, do I live within 3 miles of a lot of churches? I'll bet a lot of us do. Anyway, so like it came up and I just started rifling through them, you know, Church of the Good Shepherd, this Lutheran church, whatever. Like, no. I finally get to, I say, Annunciation. She says, that's it. And I said, well, you're in luck because that is in fact on Amherst Street. She's like, okay, well, what do I need to do? And I said, well, you just need to turn around and go back the way you came. And you're literally going to just keep going on Amherst Street. You will pass it. It'll be on your left. You'll get there. And she still seems worried. She'd been, I don't know, quite frantic by the time she saw me. She must have been driving for some time feeling like, and it, look, this happens to me. It can happen to anyone. Going the wrong way. I'm going to be late. I'm not going to make the thing I got to make. And I don't know where I'm going. And so I'm effectively lost, right? And so she had been crying. She wasn't crying while we were talking, but I could tell she'd been crying. So she's upset. And she's like, how do I? And I start to explain, well, you just make it, you know, turn around here in this driveway and just go back up Amherst. And she says to me, can you just take me there? Can you lead me there? And I like sort of look down at my, like, I'm in the bike. I got the bike. The bike is, like on my bike. She's like, yeah, can I just follow you on your bike? And I said, I don't see why not. I have nothing but time. She even said at one point, like, you know, you must be busy. I'm sorry to be bothering you or something. I'm like, all I'm doing is going for a bike ride, lady. I got nothing but time to kill. If I weren't doing this, I'd be playing golf. So, like, all right. Yeah, fine. Make your U-turn, and I'm gonna head up Amherst, and we'll go together. So, I don't ride more. I'm probably going 15 miles an hour, pedaling really hard. City street, whatever. I can get up faster than that if I'm on, you know, an open rural road. But you know, there's red lights and traffic and whatnot. So anyway, she's just cruising along behind me. There's, you know, a couple of people past her. There were a couple of honks, you know, people behind her probably wondering, why isn't this person just passing this dude on the bicycle? And I'm trying to stay as much, you know, where there's room to park cars, I'm riding way to the right on the shoulder to give her room and give room. Anyway, so it goes pretty well. It's only 2-3 miles maybe from my house. So we ride down Amherst Street, and thankfully it's the right church. At least upon arrival, like getting in sight of the church, you can see there's a funeral. There's a bunch of people in mourning clothes out front, and there's a hearse, and like I think this is it. So I pull off to the side, and she pulls off, still on Amherst Street, and she's like, okay, what do I do now? And I'm like, I think we want to find you a parking spot. She's like, okay, I have a walker. Like, all right, well, it probably would be better for us to turn around. You can park on that side of the street. So let's pull another U-turn. Let's wait, you know, shoot for right up there. I'll go over there and tell you where to come. So I go across the street to where there's a parking spot, and she can safely make a U-turn. There's a driveway she can pull into. Anyway, she parks the car, and I open up the hatch of her car and get the walker out for her. And we talked when we initially had met there on the street outside my house, but she had told me her name, and I had told her my name, and she starts now talking. We're walking down Amherst Street on the sidewalk with the walker. I'm walking with my bike and my stupid elf clip-in shoes and my stupid tight shorts. And she's like, I have a black belt in karate, she tells me. And I'm a professional bowler. And a professional bowler, really? And I'm intrigued by this, right? But I'm also distracted because I'm looking at the scene in front of the church. I'm sort of waiting for someone there to recognize her, maybe. I'm noticing that there don't appear to be any sort of a, at least not at the front of this church, a ramp for someone with a walker. There's a lot of stairs, and I'm in these stupid shoes that I can't even walk down my basement stairs alone in and not feel like I'm going to break my neck. So like, I'm not feeling all that confident about helping this woman with a walker up the stairs. But thankfully, so she's telling me all this, and I'm like, bowler, my parents bowl? She's like, oh, what's their names? And I tell her their names. She doesn't recognize the names. And suddenly here comes a guy walking. He's heading for the church. He just came up a side street and is walking beside us. And I say to him, excuse me, I'm sorry to bother you. This woman and I are strangers. We just met a few minutes ago, and I helped her get down here, but I'm not equipped to go into the church. Would you mind like taking over here and helping her with her walker and get, and she's like, I can walk up the stairs. I just need you to help me with the walker. And I'm like, and this guy says, yeah. And as okay, you're all set, Mary. You know, she's like, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm like, yeah, you're very welcome. No, it was really absolutely no trouble at all. I mean, really. And it actually made me feel great to do it. So I just go off on my way, and I'm thinking, wow, what a cool thing. Like, do a nice thing for somebody. I'm not telling you this because I want credit. Just be nice. It feels really good. Like, it's the best thing I've done in weeks. I'm telling you. All right, got to take a break. Sorry. It made me emotional. All right, I'll be back to put a lid on this after this on WGR.